What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm Rolling Stone executive editor Nathan Brackett. Today we're going to talk about Neil Young and why he thinks you should not think. And also the new album from Dev Hynes, who records under the name Blood Orange. I'm here with Brittany Spanos.
Hey.
Hey, Brittany. This is one of my favorite records I've heard in the last month or so.
Definitely.
Can you tell us a little bit about Dev Hynes? He's had this very interesting career.
Yeah. So Dev Hynes records mostly under, or has become famous under, the name Blood Orange. And he has recorded 3 albums now under Blood Orange, but is also a very excellent producer and songwriter for a lot of pop artists.
He's done stuff for Solange, right?
Yeah, for Solange. That was a big relaunch for her music career. He worked with Sky Ferreira, and his song Everything is Embarrassing was also a huge launch for her pop career. And most recently, Carly Rae Jepsen, he wrote a song on her 2015 album, Emotion.
He's become kind of like the it boy producer right now.
Yeah,
or the
especially.
Cool producer. Maybe not like the one a lot of pop stars might go to for like a cool album track or something,
yeah,
rather than maybe not their hit single.
Yeah, definitely not like top 40, but very good for shifting sort of a lot of pop artists into this more indie pop experimental sound, which has become his big shtick or like career move.
But yeah. For sure.
So this year he released his 3rd album, Freetown Sound, which is named after the capital of the country, Sierra Leone, which is where his father hails from. And so the album deals a lot with imagining what his parents were like when they were kids, and also dealing with a lot of current events and issues. He like cites a lot of Black Lives Matter names, and like Trayvon Martin is mentioned.
There's
and
so much going on with this record.
Yeah, it's like extremely loaded.
Samples like KRS-One, mm-hmm, and there's a poet who he samples at the beginning.
Yeah, Ashley Hayes. She had this incredible poem called 4 Colored Girls, and it was dedicated to Missy Elliott, and it is one of the opening poems from the album, and it's sort of over this cool like jazz piece, and it's an incredible poem.
Feminism says, as a woman in my arena, you are not my competition. As a woman in my arena, your light doesn't make mine any dimmer. Dear Missy, I did not grow up to be you, but I did grow to be me and be alone.
On an audio level, there's just so much going on. There's like new wave,
yeah,
like some dance. Hip hop is not really there, but it's like hinted at. It's almost like a drummer who implies a beat. Like,
yeah,
it's like there's definitely echoes of hip hop, but not really. And then also this amazing like stuff about identity and, mm-hmm, and racial politics.
Yeah, and on that hip hop note, it's sort of like constructed in the style of hip hop almost, like with sort of the samples of jazz and really harking back to a lot of early hip hop and a lot of using these jazz and funk samples to create something. And very early on in talking about the album, Dev had mentioned how it's like inspired by Paul's Boutique by Beastie Boys. And this almost,
which
like
is, you would never think hearing,
yeah,
it, but that also you might. I mean, it's pastiche, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like a loose like interpretation of how almost Paul's Boutique is constructed and how that album feels in this world that he pulls you into.
What are some of your favorite songs?
Well, I really, really love Augustine, which is extremely loaded, and I was really happy that he released it as the first single of the album.
Please check his face to soothe him.
There are these moments of like West African Christianity, and also he cites Trayvon Martin by name, and it's also about his parents, and it's this beautiful kind of sprawling production. Like, it starts off very avant-garde and kind of jazzy, and then goes into this cool like synth pop, new wavy sound, but it's just like beautifully put together, and it's like sad, but also just like really beautiful kind of dancey song, so.
And super different from his last record, Cupid Deluxe. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're definitely, it's the same artist, but Cupid Deluxe, which I highly recommend, mm-hmm, for people to check out, maybe was a little more straightforward, a little more,
yeah,
like kind of a little pop rock and hung together and a little more straight like beats. This is a little more kind of like washes of sound.
Exactly.
Yeah,
he's definitely, this is deep dive into Dev Hynes' brain and interests. And you see a lot of collaborators that he's worked with before make appearances, and also just people from this sort of family of artists that he works with. Like Carly Rae Jepsen makes an appearance on the album on Better Than Me, which is another favorite of mine.
Seven ways to think about your eyesight.
She has this cool kind of like low speaky type of feature on it, which is really awesome. And Debbie Harry's on there, so you kind of get this punk side from him, and she's kind of doing these like really angelic vocals. So
he works so well with female singers, yeah, too. Yeah, Carly Rae Jepsen is definitely, it's definitely a different look for her too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was a big part of making Emotion sort of this huge jump from what Call Me Maybe was and into her being kind of a more indie pop artist. So it's cool to see her kind of come in on this album and expand on that.
A couple other songs you want to call out? I like Love Ya a lot. Come on, let me love ya. Come on, let me take you down, no.
Come on, let me make you. Yeah, I do love Love Ya. I love EVP and Chance. I mean, again, those are like the examples of the female vocals really shining on this album. You're the dark skin nigga in a sold out crowd. Looking at the girl with the thick blonde braids. And you're trying to make out what a t-shirt says. He worked with this artist called Kelsey Liu, who's really new on Chance. And so that's a really beautiful vocal that we kind of get to hear this newer breaking artist sort of shine on this other artist's incredible album.
All right. Well, the name of the album is Freetown Sound, and we both highly recommend it. The other song we want to talk about today is from Maxwell, which just blew me away. The song just like caught me by surprise.
Yeah. Lake by the Ocean was Maxwell's big return after 7 years away. My destiny was the forest, beach of a forest. Anything ain't nothing, it's just you. He's releasing Black Summer's Night, which is a sequel to the album, also called Black Summer's Night, but different caps. It was like
Watch
all caps
black.
Yeah. It's all about the caps sort of separating it. So it's like all caps black for the one that he released 7 years ago, and this one's all caps summer, which is a perfect sort of...
We're going to have to come up with some audio cues for that. Different emphasis when
black
we say it, so people
night.
Get... Right.
But yeah, it's Lake by the Ocean is this beautiful, beautiful, kind of picturesque R&B track, and it's kind of paints this beautiful scenic picture, and just like romantic and beautiful, and Maxwell's awesome.
And I think he's going on tour. Anyway, I can't wait to hear the rest of the record, which is out very soon.
Yeah, it's great to sort of have him back, and then especially like we have so much coming from Erykah Badu and D'Angelo, sort of this
that
almost
whole generation.
Like neo-soul revival, I guess, like all these artists being recognized for their legacy and all.
Absolutely.
That.
They've all like taken time away at different times, mm-hmm. and now they're back and they're being fully appreciated. And better than ever. Well, Brittany Spanos, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Don't like to go down to the flats. And that was Neil Young's new band, Promise of the Real, doing his song Country Home, which is a Crazy Horse song originally. Mm-hmm. I'm here with Andy Green and Patrick Doyle.
Hi there.
Hey.
What's up, cats?
Not much, cat or dog.
We're going to talk about Neil Young. We're going to talk about what the hell is going on with his new album. Patrick, you just interviewed Neil Young for a feature in the magazine.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what's happening?
I'll try. Neil, I met up with him at his hotel in New York. He was staying at the Carlisle, and he was doing a little bit of press around Earth, which is a live album. He calls it an ear movie. He went on tour with this band, Promise of the Real. It's a bunch of young guys, and they're, you know, most of them in their 20s. It's Lucas Nelson and Micah Nelson, Willie Nelson's kids, are kind of the main guys in the band.
So presumably, like, Neil was buddies with Willie,
yeah,
and that's how
from,
he
from Farm Aid.
From Farm Aid, of course.
So they call him Uncle Neil, or they used to call him Uncle Neil growing up. So he needed something to do. I mean, Crazy Horse was kind of out of commission, and... You know, CSNY also out of commission. He blew off the Buffalo Springfield tour after 8 shows. So he needed something to do that was not just him on stage with an acoustic guitar. And this, so he decided to just try to play with this band at some random benefit show. Where was that, Andy?
It was in Nebraska. It was a Pipeline show.
Yeah.
It was a show that was protesting Pipeline. It wasn't like a pro-Pipeline show.
Right, yeah. So I remember that. So that was last year or something?
It was in 2014.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So he played with them and just got something out of it that was really important to him. He wanted to.
It seems like he's just kind of having fun with them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he just enjoys playing with these guys, right?
And what's cool, it's the first time that he's ever had a backing band that were his fans, that are young people that grew up on his music. These aren't peers. these aren't studio pros. These are people 50 years younger than him that know every album cold, and it leads to an awesome show because they really push him to play rare songs, and it's great.
Right.
And they push him. Like, I don't think any other band can really push him in that way because they're all kind of deferential to Neil and let him do what he wants to do. But Lucas has grown up with Willie as a dad, and he can say, let's do this. Like, he's not afraid.
I know you guys have theories about that, especially you, Andy, about, how Neil hasn't had, for the last few years and maybe longer, he hasn't had people who, have been talking back to him that much.
Yeah. I mean, David Briggs was his producer from the very first solo album till the mid-90s, and he had no fear of him whatsoever. He would be like, this song sucks, or whatever, and he'd make the albums great. But he died in 95, and since then, I don't think Neil has been around people that are that willing to question him. And, I love Crazy Horse. I think his best work is with Crazy Horse. I worship Crazy Horse. But those guys are like half scar tissue by this point. They've been abused so many times that he's the boss, that what Neil says is what happens. And they've been fired, they've been pushed aside so many times that they're scarred. Whereas these guys,
they're basically just on call.
Right? Yeah, they're on call. And that could be 10 years between calls, and that angers them as it should. But promise of the real, these are young kids that are rock star kids that have no fear of Neil.
With a healthy sense of entitlement.
Exactly, which is very helpful. So when they say, hey, Neil, I want to play Alabama at this show, he's like, well, A, I hate that song. B, I haven't played it in 40 years, but he'll do it because they push him. And they're great kids, and it's a really awesome show that they're doing right now.
Yeah, it's like they're doing like an Inca and all these crazy songs.
Yeah, like almost every night is like a holy shit moment where they'll bring out a song that hasn't touched in forever, and they'll kill it. And then some shows, they'll walk on stage and play Down by the River for 40 minutes as the first song.
Yeah.
40 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like longer than a fish jam.
I feel like this could be another episode. Like, so much of music, so many people think that, like, people's albums or rock stars' albums are determined by what they want you to hear, when in fact they actually are determined by what rock stars want to play, the songs that they actually enjoy playing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, if Neil Young wants to play this for a half an hour, he will. I feel like he's the artist who's the most in touch with that side of him.
And it's spontaneous. He feels a moment, feels the vibe, and just goes with it. Then the next night, that same song, it will be 12 minutes. It's just the energy that he picks up on, which is pretty rare.
Yeah. Even like that old cello show that, is coming up.
That's the Desert Trip show in October. Dylan and McCartney and the Stones. And
I brought that show up with him and said, hey, what are you going to do there? And he said, I have no idea. I could do a 40-minute song, or that song could be 7 minutes. I really don't know until we walk up on stage. So he says, it's just another show. So it's not.
And some people actually will say that and not mean it, but he actually does.
I think he does.
Where so many of his peers, they see a concert almost as like a Broadway caliber show where every second is rehearsed.
So that's kind of like the theme of our discussion of Neil, right? About not overthinking it, which he's the embodiment of.
This album, Earth, it's a live album taken from being on tour with Promise of the Real. So I think it's better than the Monsanto years, which was the studio album they did together. But this is just really captures them on stage, kind of locked in with each other. And so then Neil spent about 3 or 4 months, he said, every day going into the studio and in a trailer, actually. I don't know, it was by his property or something. So he spent it adding different sounds that he recorded near his – he's back in L.A., actually. So he was walking around recording crickets and birds, and he puts them on the record – like in with the audience, because he said this is a sort of an environmental themed album. So he said they deserve to be in the audience just as much as the people did.
So how does this work? I will say, when I first heard about that, the animal noises, I thought this was, a pretty wacky idea. It doesn't sound quite as wacky as I thought it might.
I think it works because they're not that intrusive. They don't get in the way of the music. It sort of complements it. It sounds completely batshit crazy until you hear it.
Yeah.
And I still think I prefer hearing it minus the animal sounds, but they don't get in the way all that much. And in his history of insane live albums, this is one of the more normal ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into your interview, Patrick. Do you want to set up what you guys were talking about?
Well, this part of my interview is sort of when we took a digression from talking about the environment and talking about the new album. Then I was just sort of out of stuff to talk about. So I just was like, wait a minute. This is a guy that made Comes a Time. So I kind of asked him for his thoughts on that album, which he you know, didn't really care to talk about too much. But then I wanted to ask him about the Trans album, which is one of the most interesting albums he ever made, and one that I go back to more than a lot of them. And I think Andy's a big fan of that record, too. He has a Trans poster at his desk, actually. So.
I sure do.
we'll put that up on the website later. Yeah. All right, well, let's listen to a little bit of this.
Has anything surprised you about playing with this band and making it grow a little bit and growing with it?
Well, I just, you know, think that they're great. I think everything about it is really cool. Yeah. One thing is they've learned so many of my songs that they've learned more of my songs than all the other bands combined.
Wow.
Well, I mean, you know, they know over 100 of my songs and can play them and sing them at the drop of a hat. So it's like, and with a great groove, everything right. It's very cool. That's very freeing for me.
Songs like Mother Earth, that song is more relevant today than it ever was, I think. And
well, as time goes by, these songs become more relevant because of the situation that we're in, you know, that we put ourselves in.
You making Human Highway, these messages are like today are finally what people are talking about.
Well, they've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
It's just that hopefully enough people will get aware of it so that some sort of change can happen. I don't see the change. I don't see people understanding what's going on. I still don't get it. Got the CEOs of oil company, I think the CEO of Chevron pronounced that fossil fuels are not dead and they're not going away. They're always going to be here in a big way. You know, they just don't get it.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Or nobody will be here in a big way if they do that. You know, some people will survive this, but it won't be like it was. And Earth will survive it, but the human race is unable to see too far ahead. Like when I arrived in L.A. and joined the Buffalo Springfield in 1966, since then we've lost 90% of the fish we eat from the ocean. There's only 10% of them left. And there's three times as many of us. So, you know, the math.
Yeah.
It's math.
Yeah.
It's very basic.
Yeah. Do you see anyone now writing songs that is on par with some of your favorite songwriters or anyone coming up now?
Oh, I know they're there.
Yeah.
But you can't hear them the way, you know, it's not the same. The world has changed so much, and radio is now controlled by formats. Yeah. Formats are pre-recorded and dictated. What the playlists are, the DJs don't have much of an idea.
Yeah, that's the sad thing. It's like the
that's where the creativity came from.
Yeah.
That's where spreading new music used to come from, was
yeah.
DJs.
Yeah.
I really do think that there's a place for rebel radio. I think that there's a place for AM analog send
yeah.
radio with
yeah.
special receivers and everything going back. So that people, and on those stations, the jocks play exactly what they can't want to play.
Yeah.
They play vinyl, they play new stuff, they play old stuff, and you can hear it all because it's analog.
Yeah.
And that's very, it's critical that the creativity return to music, that the people who play it get to make choices.
Yes.
So we have some variety.
Yes.
We don't have any variety. It's all like GMO music now. It's all completely controlled. It's reduced in its intensity by the technology, and then the content is controlled by the corporations that format and program the radio stations. It's,
yeah.
it's an unbelievable situation.
Yeah, but most people that started making music 50 years ago have really slowed down or don't, you know, but you have not slowed down one bit, really.
There's no reason to slow down. Just because everything else as far as I'm concerned, it's broken.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I have to be broken. You know, I can keep on going. I did do a lot of stuff, and not all of it was great. You know, some of it wasn't right for then, but in an historical perspective, putting it in a long story, it really has a big part to play. So.
Yeah. The Comes of Time record is one of my favorite albums.
Well, thank you.
Is that, do you like that one a lot now?
Sure.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Trans record, I love that. I listen to that one all
That's
the time.
A good one.
How do you look back on that album?
Well, that was a lot of fun. It was a great experience. It's born out of, you know, my son was born with cerebral palsy, quadriplegic, and couldn't talk, can't speak. and couldn't communicate very well. His body wouldn't react and let him do what we do. So a lot of that singing through the vocoders and everything, and people not being able to understand what I was saying, there's a representation of what I thought it must be like for him.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's maybe a little bit complex for people to understand where I was coming from with that. But nonetheless, you know, when that record came out, I got in a lot of negativity because I was singing through a machine.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was not the right time for me to do that in the view of people who thought I should be doing something else. So, you know, that's okay.
Do you notice, I mean, you know, it was sort of a very forward-thinking album of what happened later on.
Well, you know, it is what it is. I enjoyed it while I was doing it. It seemed like a natural progression to me.
What is life like for you day to day? What do you do? What do you do with your time, like these days?
I have very little time. I'm doing things all the time. It took me many, many days and weeks and actually months of post-production in the studio to finish Earth, to take 13 live performances and do what we did to those performances, and also create the sounds that are in the audience and on the stage, and sounds of the animals in the wild and everything all coming together in one place. When you listen to it, you go, wow, but that's interesting, or wow, it's like kind of a meditation, or I'm floating, or I'm going, I don't ever get to stop.
Yes.
I just keep moving. You know, and there's no big trick to that. It's just that today there's nothing to play that on. There's nothing, you can't do that on iTunes. After a few minutes, it's got to fade out and come back up because it's programmed to do that.
Yeah.
They can't accept songs that are longer than a certain length because they can't pay. They can't keep track of the money because their programs don't do that. This kind of thing has been very damaging to music.
Yeah.
Let alone the quality of the sound, which is terrible, and you can't hear the music anyway.
Yeah.
But it has degraded music in the world's eye to a point where it's like wallpaper and background.
And as people who follow Neil Young know, quality of sound is a big thing for him with his music player Pono, which I actually interviewed him about a couple years ago at CES, and he's got a lot of serious theories about what iTunes and digital music formats have done to the way we experience music.
Yeah.
But that's actually a whole other episode.
Yeah.
How about we just take our remaining time to talk about trans and some of the moments where Neil Young has like followed his musical id the furthest. Because I feel like he's got this combination of like totally following his gut, but then having this incredible follow through.
Yeah, it's almost as if he's incapable of doing something that he doesn't totally believe in at any moment. So he's willing to really damage his career and even his finances to do what he wants. I mean, the first thing would be Time Fades Away. That between 1970 and 72, he was one of the biggest stars in all of music, with CSNY, with After the Gold Rush, with Harvest. He had Heart of Gold, was the number one hit, the biggest song of that whole year, 72. Then he goes on tour and plays all these new songs and puts out a huge live album of just these new songs that were really uncommercial.
I mean, he could have made another Harvest.
He could have easily made Harvest,
and
too.
Been as big as anybody. It's Carole King or anybody.
He did that whole singer-songwriter thing better than almost anybody in that moment, and then just walked away from it completely.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Rust Never Sleeps, he could have done 1,000 more songs like Powderfinger and whatnot. But he signed with Geffen, and then the 80s happened, and he made Trans, which is like Kraftwerk almost. And he's singing into a vocoder, so his vocals are all distorted. It's a crazy album that his fans did not want, that David Geffen did not want. But he was ballsy enough to be like, to just put it out.
He was just on the Marin podcast, and he told some story that I hadn't heard, maybe you guys have, about how his label at the time, how Geffen asked him, either somebody at the label or Geffen himself said, why don't you just go back to rockin' and make a rock and roll record?
Yeah.
So he made his 50s record, Everybody's Rocking.
Everybody's Rocking solely to piss off David Geffen, basically. And there's not one of his
just
fans.
Just a very, like, twee, it's an awesome record, but it's, like, very...
It's a okay record.
It's like a joke record.
It's a joke record, but... He got sued by David Geffen for making music that was non-commercial, essentially, which was an insane lawsuit. And then, you know, he put out a whole live album in 91 that was just feedback. It was just 40 minutes of feedback sewn together from various shows on his Crazy Horse
Tour. Was that Arc Weld?
It was the bonus disc off of Weld. You know, he did Fork in the Road, like 10 songs about his car.
But he did, the Human Highway film, films he's made.
He makes crazy movies.
He acted as a, what was he playing?
He spent 4 years filming Human Highway, where he's like a mentally challenged auto mechanic.
Yeah.
You know.
Bob Dylan wouldn't do that.
Yeah. No, he's consistently willing to do the uncommercial things. He recorded a new album with CSNY in the 80s, but he went tour. You know, he went tour. There's so much money that he left on the table. You know, and like part of it is his first take, best take philosophy. He really thinks that you shouldn't spend too much time on your albums. You should tape everything. And like albums, they should be made in like 2 days.
You can certainly hear that. I mean, a lot of his lyrics feel like so just almost written off the top of his head or like in this kind of plain spoken.
Yeah.
His recent lyrics especially, you know.
Yeah, feel it's like an email.
An email, like kind of almost like prosaic, sometimes in a good way, sometimes in a bad way, you know. But very much just like, it's like he's talking.
It's his passion. Whatever's on, but if you go back to a song like Ohio, it's just what happened. It's a simple account of the massacre, and it's brilliant. And, like, tonight's the night.
But he can get very abstract, too, like, you know, Pocahontas or, you know.
Right. If he's on drugs or something, he can write Cinnamon Girl or something, you know. But
it's been a while.
He is smoking weed again, actually. There's a long period where he was clean. Now he's smoking weed again.
We'll see what that does to the songs.
When I talked to Micah Nelson, he said, "That's our fault."
All you kids.
It would be very hard to be on tour with both Willie Nelson's sons and not be smoking weed again. It would be almost impossible, probably.
I guess they get together about 30 minutes before every set and get into a circle and start to sort of do these vocal exercises, kind of humming and sort of getting locked in with each other is what they do before they step on stage, because it sort of spills into when they step on stage, they're already in sort of a groove together from doing these vocal exercises that are very sort of important to the show.
And again, these shows are super special. I think a lot of fans stay away from seeing Neil Young because they've been burned in the past. They saw the Greendale tour. It was all Greendale straight through. They'll see so many tours where it's just new songs that they don't care about. But this tour is really the good stuff.
And you can hear that on this album. I mean, you have the animal noises and you have half-hour versions, but these are also like kind of some great classic songs,
well,
too.
He's playing
Vampire Blues.
Vampire Blues, which he never plays. And even Hippie Dream, this obscure 80s song just bashing CSN. Just this like vicious attack on the 60s and CSN in particular. And it's crazy. He's like, and those wooden ships were just a hippie dream, and just going over and over again. And it's awesome.
He said that that he can do that because the band can sort of, months after they practice something once, he can call it out on stage. And he said one of the problems with that he has is he really doesn't like showing people his music. That he said after 50 years, you can imagine how tired I would get to show people how to play my songs. So he said, this band, they don't have to do that. So that's sort of very freeing to him.
I could see that. All right, here's how you play Cinnamon Girl.
He's sick of it. And he's 70 years old, but his voice is still great. He's still playing guitar great. He's playing the same guitar. I mean, out of everybody that's playing old cello, he's really the most vital person there as far as the show changes a lot. He pulls out bold new albums.
Again, old cello is our term for the Desert Trip Festival.
Yeah, it's a widely used term by this point.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty amazing thing that he's still preserved. If you see him now, it's a very similar experience to seeing him back in the 70s.
Is he playing more dates this summer?
He's in Europe right now, in the middle of a huge European tour.
All right, so...
And then he's playing Farm Aid, and then there's Old Cella for 2 weekends, the Birch Club Benefit, and it seems very likely there will be more October dates with Promise of the Real.
All right, well, hopefully our listeners will be able to check him out. Andy Green, Patrick Doyle. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for Rolling Stone Music Now. If you like what you heard, please leave a review on the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts.